Long time ago in Bethlehem, so the Holy Bible say, Mary's boy child, Jesus Christ, was born on Christmas Day. Hark now, hear the angels sing, a new king born today. And man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. Trumpets sound and angels sing, listen what they say, that man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. While shepherds watch their flock by night, them see a bright new shining star. Them hear a choir sing, the music seemed to come from afar. Now Joseph and his wife Mary come to Bethlehem that night. Then find no place to born she child, not a single room was in sight. Hark now, hear the angels sing, a new king born today. And man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. Trumpets sound and angels sing, listen what they say, that man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day.
I have a strange request and suggestion for all of you tonight. Whether you may happen to like or dislike the opening pieces of music that we use on this program, don't ever walk away from it, because you'll have no idea what comes with it. And tonight, maybe a little good news. Good evening. Welcome to The Edge of Darkness. I'm your host, Jeffrey Bennett, for the next hour. I was listening to some tunes earlier, several hours ago, and they're all Christmas tunes, and it's some things I'm working on for a program, series of programs. The closer we get to Christmas, we'll probably play more pieces, but this piece struck me. Struck me in a way that no other piece of Christmas music ever struck me before. And good reason for it. Think about this historical venue that Harry Belafonte sang to us so many years ago, that may have greater meaning today than at any time in our lives. What would have happened 2021 odd years ago, if when Mary went into the manger, she made a decision she wanted an abortion, and Joseph went along with it? What would have happened? What would have happened to humanity? What would have happened to what this nation at one time became, and in so many respects has lost what it became? Several days ago, we made some comments about the Supreme Court and the program that's before it today, possibility of overturning Roe v. Wade. And I know that for many people there's mixed bags with all of that. And yet 3 hours ago, and emotionally I've not had a good day. I woke up this morning, I went to the credit union, I had to deposit a couple of checks. One is a check that had been signed over to me. It comes from UPS, interestingly enough. Made out to my daughter, and several weeks ago her purse was stolen, all of her IDs, everything. She can't even cash the check. So she was here last night, and she had no clue I was going to do this. I asked her how much it was for. She told me. I knew I had that much cash available right now in my hand. So I had her sign the check over to me. And I went to the credit union, and it was amongst the two checks that I deposited. And the teller at the bank told me that I could not deposit it. They would not accept third-party checks. I said, well, she's got the same last name as we do, but she doesn't have an account here. I said, no, but my wife and I do. And I said, the check's been signed over to me. It comes from UPS. Why should this be a problem? Well, she finally broke and said, well, I'll accept it, but understand the bank itself may deny it, in which case you will get the check back and get hit with a $15 fee. I said, I'll take that chance because I'll raise holy living hell with the frickin' credit union if they do that. From there, I had to go on to my urologist's office for a few moments. What I hope would be a few moments turned out to be a half an hour because my new catheter, which is 3 days old, suddenly began to leak last night. Now, I thought I suspected it and felt some moisture, and I looked it over. I couldn't see any leaks coming out of it, so I figured, it must be something else. Well, my carpet in the bedroom was somewhat damp this morning, and it leaked quite a bit, so I went in there to ask for a new one. And when I went in there, she said, well, Mr. Bennett, on Thursdays, we deal strictly with female issues. And I said, well, let's just consider that I became a transgender last night, so we're going to deal with my female issues. She actually began to laugh. And they had to call my doctor to find out exactly what they needed to do. And the doctor said, go ahead and do it. And I waited and waited and waited, and pretty soon she came out. And I said, no, all I need is the kit. I don't need anybody to change this thing out, etc. So this is the kind of day that I had, and just it all started out horribly negative. And then 3 hours ago, I got a news report that came in. Now think about what we talked about. What would have happened if Christ, his mother, would have been aborted? Aborted that child. And that's the reason I chose this opening piece of music. Because it was reported late today that lawyers and justices on both sides of this issue, with the possible exception of John Roberts, appeared to be past pretending that this Mississippi case we spoke about the other night is about anything less. During the Supreme Court oral arguments on Tuesday in the case of Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, which, if you recall, involves a Mississippi ban on most abortions after 15 weeks. Justice Brett Kavanaugh began to rhapsodize about the history-making power that the court has. He began listing major cases, and there's a string of them, he said, which had overturned earlier precedents. Brown versus the Board of Education, Baker versus Carr, West Coast Hotel versus Parrish, Miranda versus Arizona, Lawrence versus Texas, Mapp versus Ohio, Gideon versus Wainwright, Obergefell versus Hodges, and some of these cases I'm not even familiar with. But Kavanaugh continued, and I could go on, and those are some of the most consequential and important in the court's history, he said. If the court in the Dobbs case thinks that the prior precedents are seriously wrong, can it pursue the right answer instead? If it never overturned precedents, he said, the country would be a much different place. Well, of course, the precedents that Kavanaugh is talking about tossing aside in this instance are Roe v. Wade, decided in 1973, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, decided in 1992, the cases that enshrined reproductive rights and access to abortion. And he and other justices, more likely than not a majority, based on their questions in the oral arguments, appear ready to add Dobbs to the list of landmarks by using it to explicitly overturn Roe and Casey. And the fallback would be a decision that leaves those rulings in place as merely empty shells, deprived of most of their practical effect. Now, for years, many states have chipped away at reproductive rights with regulations and restrictions that, for example, left Jackson Women's Health as the only provider of abortions in Mississippi. But Dobbs is different. In a few months' time, when this decision is likely to be handed down, the right to an abortion, as Americans have known it for half a century, will, it appears, no longer exist. Indeed, the lawyers and the justices on both sides, as I mentioned before, with the possible exception of John Roberts, appeared to be past pretending that the case is about anything less. The Mississippi law's 15-week prohibition is several weeks before the point of viability, or when a fetus is able to survive outside the womb, even with the latest medical help. First, Jackson's Women's Health immediately challenged the law, won the first rounds in lower courts, and with good reason. But between them, Roe and Casey established viability as the point before which a woman's right to end her pregnancy is supposed to be secure, with no undue burden placed upon her exercise of that right. That is, without so many hoops and barriers that she cannot really obtain one. But this right is just as critical, of course, for trans and gender nonconforming people who can become pregnant. And that means that under existing precedents, the Mississippi law is unconstitutional on its face. And the court thus puts Roe on the docket when it took the case this spring, saying that it would consider whether states could impose pre-viability restrictions. That alone is a broad mandate. Without viability, the standard for drawing the line becomes unclear, less tethered to a principle, possibly non-existent. Mississippi, for example, has another law on hold pending litigation that would ban abortions after 6 weeks, counting from the last menstrual cycle, possibly no more than days after a missed period. But in filing since the court accepted the case, the implicit has become explicit. Scott Stewart, the Mississippi Solicitor General, opened the state's argument on Tuesday with the words, Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey haunt our country. They have no basis in the Constitution. They have no home in our history or traditions. They have damaged the democratic process. They have poisoned the law. And almost 2 hours later, at the end of his rebuttal, he called Roe an egregiously wrong decision that has inflicted tremendous damage on our country and will continue to do so and take innumerable human lives unless and until this court overrules it. And we ask the court to do so in this case. Now, in between those statements, Julie Rickleman, the lawyer for Jackson Women's Health, and Elizabeth Preloger, the U.S. Solicitor General, did an excellent job of laying out why those precedents do, in fact, have a basis in the Constitution, particularly the 14th Amendment with its promise of liberty. And in our history and traditions, citing both the control that women in the early republic widely had to end a pregnancy before quickening under common law, and the way that Roe has been integrated into Americans' lives in these past 50 years, including in the movement for women's rights at home and in the workplace, forming part of our history now. And the liberal justices, Stephen Breyer, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan, as we mentioned the other night, spoke with real passion as well, particularly Sotomayor. But there were only three of them and six conservatives. And so it became telling that Kavanaugh and the other conservative justices focused not on whether to overturn Roe and Casey, but on what would be left if they did. Amy Coney Barrett prompted Stewart to say that certain other non-abortion presidents would not be disturbed if Mississippi won. A questionable assertion, given the role of Woe in articulating privacy rights. Kavanaugh asked him to clarify that Mississippi was not asking the court to prohibit abortion, but arguing that the Constitution is neither pro-life nor pro-choice on the question of abortion, but leaves the issue for the people of the states, or perhaps Congress, to resolve in the democratic process. Oh, God, don't turn it over to Congress. We know what'll happen there. But Stewart agreed. In that case, Kavanaugh continued, if you were to prevail, the states, a majority of the states, or states still could, or and presumably would, continue to freely allow abortion. You see, the message was that middle-class women in states like New York and California needn't trouble themselves. They could just look away, which is pure nonsense. You see, there's a difference between living with a right and relying on the indulgence of a state legislature. And it is an insult to people in every state to say that they needn't care about the liberty and the well-being of people in another state who might be deprived of choice or pushed toward the sort of unsafe, illegal abortions that often cost women of earlier generations their lives. But it also must be noted that 24 states, including Arizona, Florida, Indiana, Ohio, and Texas, jointly submitted an amicus curiae brief supporting Mississippi's position and asking the court to overturn Roe. My friends, it is, again, possible that the court will leave Roe and Casey in place and merely render their protections mostly meaningless, a forlorn hope, but one that Roberts concentrated on. At one point, Roberts asked Preloger, the Solicitor General, why people who had, quote, planned their lives according to a 24 or whatever week limit couldn't simply be a little quicker on their feet and adjust to a 15-week limit. Well, Preloger replied by noting that Mississippi wasn't asking for a clear 15-week line. Instead, they're asking the court to reverse the liberty interest altogether or leave it up in the air. And if that were to happen, then immediately states with 6-week bans, 8-week bans, 10-week bans, and so on, would all seek to enforce those. Well, that may be what they're asking for, Roberts said. But the thing is, at issue before us today is 15 weeks, Roberts concluded. That remark may have been a sign of his impatience. It certainly spoke to his isolation. Neil Gorsuch, by contrast, seemed to be using his questions to support the idea that if viability were abandoned, there would not be a clear alternative standard. Stewart had made the argument in saying that rather than live with the resulting lack of clarity, the court should just go all the way and overrule Roe and Casey. Well, Clarence Thomas, who we mentioned the other night, had been in the minority on Casey the first time around. It was made no secret of his continued opposition. Samuel Alito told Reichelman, the lawyer for the clinic, that he interpreted her brief to mean that, quote, the only real options we have are to reaffirm Roe and Casey as they stand or to overrule them in their entirety. You see, there are, in fact, other options, such as setting a standard that is not strictly viability, but still offers protections in a meaningful way. But there were few signs that the conservatives, other than Roberts, were seeing their way to anything of that kind. You know, one of the things that I find interesting with this is that their desire to overturn Roe v. Wade is something that I personally happen to agree with. Think about my daughter. My daughter, who is not a particularly good friend, my wife and I, at this point in time. She's made major mistakes in her life. Through involvement with two men, she had three children out of wedlock. The first one's my 21-year-old. The second is 17, nearly 18. There's another one in between. And at one point in time, with that second one, our daughter considered abortion and realized she did not have it within her to do that. And a neighborhood friend of ours, who I had not seen for many, many years, but I saw her at our son's funeral a few months ago. And she and I talked. She and I have actually stayed in very close touch. She's married. She's got her kids. These are kids that all met at the age of 6 and knew each other for all these years and still cohabitated, no matter what their problems were, their marriages, their drug habits in some instances. Now, I knew that her family had known the people who ultimately adopted that second child, the one who was being put up, who was being considered for adoption. It turns out it was the young girl that knew this family and knew that this family had been trying desperately to adopt. They had no ability to have children. And that's how the introduction was made. The very unique thing is that young friend of my son's will soon be meeting this 19-year-old girl who she was very instrumental in finding loving parents for. What would have happened if the abortion would have taken place? I think my daughter, to be honest with you, would have had even greater regret than all that took place. I think about all that we are witnessing right now with these vaccines and the realization that Big Pharma profits immensely, immensely with abortion, because body parts are being used to, and body tissue is all being used to help create these god-awful poisonous vaccines that are being issued all around the world. And I think about another aspect of it. What about the rights of that unborn child who, once that 15-week period comes along, is considered a human being? That child could be born and survive. And we came across one of those very examples very, very recently within the last couple of weeks. Understand, the issue of planning one's life was connected to the question of what sort of precedent that Roe and Casey, seen together, represent. The court does overturn past decisions, but it also takes respect for stare decisis, letting what has been decided stand into account. And they have in the past recognized that certain of its precedents represent what Roberts at one point called super stare decisis. And Breyer referred to it as a super case. These precedents are accorded the highest level of deference in part of what is referred to as reliance on them. Other court decisions, assumptions about life choices, freedom to enjoy other rights, and what Kagan called the fabric of women's existence in this country. The fabric of women's existence in this country. What about the fabric of that unborn child and what their existence in this country would become or could become, whether they be male or female? Well, Breyer used his question to emphasize the view that Roe falls into said category. And Sotomayor, in a powerful rejoinder to what she called Justice Kavanaugh's long litany of cases in which we've overruled precedent. Spoke to Rose Place in an ongoing procession since the end of the Civil War toward greater liberty. Of all the decisions that Kavanaugh listed, she continues, all of them invite virtually, except for maybe one, involved us recognizing and overturning state control over issues that we said belong to individuals. Now, there might be one possible exception here, because West Coast Hotel involved the court upholding the minimum wage. And that is indeed true of Brown in 1954, which ended legalized school segregation. Thank God for that. And the MAP case in 1961, Gideon in 63, Miranda in 66, which protected the rights of people accused of crimes. Lawrence in 2003, which decriminalized homosexual relations. Obergefell 2015, which recognized the right to marriage equality for same-sex couples. But none of these things would be true for Dobbs. Barrett, in her questioning of Rickleman, offered a glimpse of an alternative America. You see, she had apparently been struck by the mention in the Mississippi brief of a proliferation of state safe haven laws that make it easier for someone who has given birth to terminate parental rights, including in many cases by anonymously leaving a newborn in a safe place. No. Roe and Casey and the arguments on behalf of Jackson's women's health, Barrett said, noted, quote, the ways in which forced parenting, forced motherhood would hinder women's access to the workplace and to equal opportunities. It's also focused on the consequences of parenting and the obligations of motherhood that flow from pregnancy. And she concluded by saying, why don't the safe haven laws take care of that problem? But you see, adults understand how a woman becomes pregnant. The woman certainly does. You know, little loosey-goosey activity one night after a bar thing can cause a pregnancy. If they are that concerned about, you know, forced parenting, forced motherhood, etc., 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 why don't these people or these couples take a little bit more serious action? None of this makes sense. Barrett continued by acknowledging that there still could be issues with pregnancy itself. And she said, an infringement on bodily autonomy, you know, which we have in other contexts like vaccines. Of course, the vaccine reference was not explained further. The courts expected to hear challenges to vaccine mandates. It seemed to Barrett that the possibility of adoption focuses the burden much more narrowly. In short, her rather breathtaking suggestion was that having a child was not something a woman could claim was a significant imposition if there was somewhere she could just drop off the baby or put the child up for adoption. Rickleman replied by noting how serious, distinct, and intertwined the experiences of pregnancy and childbirth and parenthood are. She also reminded Barrett that adoption was an option when Roe was decided as well. The exchange became relevant because one justification for overturning a foundational case would be that the material circumstances surrounding it had substantially changed. And so the factor raises the possibility that Barrett's assertion of the game-changing novelty of safe haven laws is disingenuous rather than delusional. But the change that has brought Dobbs this far is a different one. Donald Trump got to appoint Barrett and Kavanaugh and Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. Sotomayor noted the sponsor of Mississippi's pending six-week ban said, "We're doing it because we have new justices on the Supreme Court." And then asked, "Will this institution survive the stench this creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts?" You see, I find that interesting. And this is, who is this? This is Sotomayor saying this. "Will this institution survive the stench that this creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts?" Why is this such a joke? Because that's exactly how these leftist bastards treat the Constitution every time they open their mouths and make a decision. But there could be another question. Whether certain Republicans whose party has pushed opposition to reproductive rights as a useful divisive tool will come to regret what they have wrought. Some who found taking that position easy when lack of access to abortion was an abstraction because of Roe's protection may in fact face different demands from their own voters now. But a more pressing question may be whether people who care about reproductive rights are ready to take the fight to legislatures in all 50 states. Because that's where the future of abortion will most likely be decided, in a world after Roe. The country will be a different place. And in my personal opinion, I thank God for it. A little good news today. What has surprised me is this is a reasonably balanced presentation of this issue. Published today, written by Amy Davidson Sorkin in the New Yorker magazine. A little bit more well-balanced than New York Times, but it's titled, "The Supreme Court Looks Ready to Overturn Roe v. Wade." I pray it happens. Because it's not the fault of a child that a woman became impregnated. It is the fault of that woman. It is the fault of the man she was with. Maybe the woman got pregnant, and from the time that she had the event which impregnated her, maybe broke up with the guy, maybe made a decision to divorce her husband, and wanted nothing to do with having to raise that child, because I have to think back to, And you may disagree with me on some of these issues. I have to think back to the Equal Rights Amendment. And I'm not anti-woman working by any stretch of the imagination. But there's a point in time, the whole Equal Rights Amendment situation, we now have more women employed than at any time in our history, which I have no problem with. But you can't do it all. Who's raising our children today? This is a big problem. We've discussed this on numerous occasions, specifically as it relates to the education system. We're sticking our kids in daycare at the age of 2 and 3, which means effectively we as parents have given up our obligations to raise and that child. Now we're saying that it doesn't matter. I want an abortion. It's what I want. The child doesn't matter. We've got situations going on right now where we've got states like New York that allow abortions almost up to the moment of birth. That's pure murder. What happened to the rights of that human body? It seems that all the rights were handed to one individual and taken away from the other. But then there's so much money for Big Pharma in the whole deal. It's maybe because you're better understanding of why I chose that opening piece of music. What happened if Mary said, "No, I'm done with this guy Joseph. I want to pick up with one of these three guys over here with the camels," and just ignore what would have been my responsibility? Much to think about. If you're with me, Michael, let's go ahead and take a short break, a regular break. I've got time to conclude where I'm going to go with this program. That's if Michael's in the studio. He had to run out and take care of something. If not, he's not there. So it's one of these strange issues that you may agree with the things I've said tonight. You may agree with the direction. I have a personal problem with abortion. I thank God for the birth of all four of my grandchildren. All happen to be granddaughters, but that's okay with me. Each one has a very special place in my heart and in my love. And we give each to every one of them, even the one that is our birth grandchild. She is listed in my phone as missing granddaughter, and I'm listed in her phone as missing grandfather. And she was here just a week or so ago for a couple of nights, and she comes and stays over here, and because she's a couple of years older, and my 17-year-old. Thinks that her 19-year-old sister may be a little immature for her age. And I said, "Honey, you've got to realize something." I talked to her about this today. That you have to realize that your sister, Kyra, in effect has an adoptive mother and father. They have raised her. And they are very good people. I think the mother's a little wacky, but each to their own. I don't live with her, so I don't know how wacky she can be in real life. But, and then she's got a couple of grandmothers or something, but you never hear her talk about them. And I said, you realize that whether you were raised together or not, Kyra still looks at Taylor and Kylie as her sisters. And when she's home from school, she goes to school in Texas. They live out here in the West Valley and of Phoenix. But Kyra got scholarships because of her swimming abilities. But it's since fallen out of bed, and a swimming coach who's a, shall we say, lesbian friends, has become a very cruel, horrid individual. And the swimming team continues to break up because of her bitchiness. And there's been more complaints filed at the school about this coach and her attitude and the way she treats everybody. But think about if we didn't have Kyra in our lives. It gave these kids, my other children, the ability to reach out to someone else. I said, so I understand Kyra's different because she was raised differently in a very similar way in some respects. But the fact of the matter is that if our daughter had aborted her, Kyra would not be a part of our lives. And I know it's very rare for a child that's been put up for adoption to maintain a relationship with their blood family. But she has done so, and she's always welcome here. And her mother and father both know that. So, no, I'm vehemently against abortion. I know that there are some life and death situations that can change that. But we can't use it as the excuse each and every time. Oh, gee, if I have this child, I'm going to lose my job because I won't be able to work. Well, good. Your first job is to pay attention to that child. Be a part of that child's life. That's my personal opinion. You don't have to agree with me. But the fact of the matter is that if you're going to have a child, that is a part of your life. That is a part of your obligation to raise, to teach, to love, to nurture, to share with those children the things that the school systems don't do a damn thing about today. My God, I'd much rather walk away from all of this and be responsible for the direction that my child would take as a father. You know, in most of their younger years, my wife did not work. She was home raising the children. Of course, most of the time I was home too. And well, I shouldn't say that, because when I worked in Flagstaff and had my company up there, I was pretty well committed to that work and very deeply involved, even to the point that I had a sofa bed in my office. And when we built the building, I ensured that a shower was installed in that building as well, because I knew that there were going to be projects I was going to be working on that would, even though I was 5 miles away from home, 7 miles away from home, that I could be in that office for days at a time. But never departed. Always stayed very involved with the upbringing of our children. And unfortunately, things happen. You can only instill into a child as much as you can instill. But the moment they get out in society and their the emphasis is in other directions, you cannot control that. You've got to pray God you've done the job the right way to the early stage. I think our biggest problem is when we move down here to the valley and things began to change. Sad. But we have no regret of not aborting. I will go to my grave feeling this strongly about this issue. And whether you agree or disagree is not even the issue. Let's move in a different direction for the balance of the program. I had no idea that I would spend this much time on this issue tonight. I hope it affects some of you. I hope it. You may agree. You may absolutely be in total disagreement with this. I hope this comes to pass. But out of it, even if it comes to pass, I smell rats. Think about it. In this year of our Lord, 2021, it seems that we have forgotten the official motto of the United States of America, E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one. Up through January 21st of 2009, America had achieved a society where our culture accepted fully the concept of E Pluribus Unum. America had evolved into a true melting pot where people from anywhere in the world could arrive legally, and be blended into America as a citizen with all the rights associated therewith. By the 1970s, the tribalism that had existed in America had pretty well evaporated. Interracial marriages became commonplace. Whites, blacks, Oriental, Hispanics, Central Asians were all marrying without regard to ethnic or national backgrounds. America, in effect, had become the least racist country on the planet and was truly colorblind. Then came the inauguration of one Barack Hussein Obama, the first black president of the United States of America. And instead of leading the historic solidification of America by reinforcing the concept of E Pluribus Unum, we got the most divisive president in American history. A president that reignited the conflict between races and initiated high levels of distrust between American citizens and the police, and created divides between every conceivable group in America, including sexual orientation. And Obama and his socialist elitists and their minions needed to have the nation as divided as possible in order to be able to inflict the level of control needed over this American population. We, the people. And Obama and his minions had to sow hate and fear in every direction possible, because fear is the most effective weapon that can be used to steal individual liberty. A prosperous nation fully accepting and operating in the spirit of a e pluribus unum is the very antithesis of a globalist, socialist, elitist-controlled society wanted by Obama and his Democratic minions. But even after his formal time as president, the criminal conspiracy of his deep state, the media, the federal legislature, continued generating hate and fear through lies and deception through the Trump administration. Trump served as the greatest president in many people's lifetimes, maybe probably since George Washington. But the conspiracy of the deep state and dishonest top health industry advisors tricked Trump into buying into the greatest health hoax in history. And as a result, the experimental drug treatment marketed as a vaccine has killed more people in the world than all other vaccines in history combined. And until this fraudulent vaccine, no other vaccine in history was allowed to stay on the market if it killed as few as 15 people and never before more than a few hundred. And so the various COVID-19 medications, vaccines, whatever you want to call them, have killed hundreds of thousands, probably millions of people, injured millions, probably tens of millions of people. Because it appears to be more like a Bill Gates population control drug than a vaccine. And so more and more evidence continues to come out each and every day about the failures of COVID-19 and their vaccines and the criminal conspiracy behind the whole damn COVID-19 and COVID-19 vaccine fraud. But people are not listening, or they choose not to hear. Which demonstrates exactly how successful fear is being used as a weapon that allows people to so easily sacrifice the liberties that our forefathers fought and died for. Fear, my friends, is keeping too many people from believing their own lying eyes and ears. Because fear is a powerful tool. And in late 2021, the yoke of communism is suspended over our heads and about to be lowered into place by the ruling class of global and socialist and elitists in D.C. Are we going to go quietly into the yoke or fight to break free? We are many individuals with individual concerns and individual problems, but are we willing to come together as one and reject the yoke of communism? E Pluribus Unum will require us to reject the message of the hate and the fear-mongers sponsored by the elitist ruling class. E Pluribus Unum will require that we reject the hate and fear-mongers that wish to keep us as divided as possible. And we must remember that if we don't hang together, we will surely hang separately, as the socialist government will take us down one by one by one. It is now late 2021. The United States of America is only a shadow of what it was just 2 years ago. In 2019, our economy was booming, and now the economy's in the toilet. And we were at the highest level of employment in the lifetime of most Americans, and now businesses all over the country are begging for people to come to work. Even a year ago, America was energy independent, and now Obama Jr., you know, Killer Joe, is begging for OPEC to ship us more oil. And until January 21st of this year, America was highly respected again all around the world, and now we have become a laughingstock. And until January 21st of this year, America had the most secure border it had had in the last century, and now we're being invaded by people from nearly every nation in the world by the millions. My God, people. Which America do you want? The E Pluribus Unum traditional God-fearing America, where individual rights, individual initiative, individual creativeness, an individual willingness to take risks, And to be charitable and individual willingness is to defend the rights of others at the foundation? Or do you want the socialist America controlled by the global elitist ruling class that knows better how to spend your money and what is best for your individual health? We'll try to control every facet of your life. That is the America we've been test driving for the last 10 months. In the words of George Washington, e pluribus unum, out of many, one. Our cause is noble. It is the cause of mankind. I hope and pray that that which we've attempted to do here tonight is going to make people think. Maybe even pray more deeply than they have for an awful lot of years. This is scary stuff. Very, very scary stuff. I don't like the direction we've taken. Not just in this Obama, this so-called administration of Killer Joe. That's what he is. He's killing people. He's killing the economy. He's killing this nation. Sad. Oops, I'm hitting the wrong keys. We're going to close tonight with a piece of music that I use oh so often. And I think it has greater meaning tonight than maybe all the various nights we've used it, but maybe not. George Michael, do we have the time? Tomorrow night, one of our Friday musical interludes, part one of a two-part series, this time on Ella Fitzgerald, the finest and the best there ever was. So I hope you'll join us for that. My purpose is to get you to sit back, relax, remember the good times, dance, have a little cocktail. Enjoy your time with your spouse. And Lord willing, I'll be back Monday. I'm in a strange mood tonight. A more relatively calm mood. I pray to God that the basis of this story tonight comes to pass. But I know that even if Roe v. Wade is overturned, these battles will never end. We become a very murderous nation. It's time for it to end. God bless you all. Thanks for being with us tonight. And good night. Do you think we have time? Do you think we have time? These are the days of the open hand. We will not be the last. Look around now. These are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past. Hand in hand with ignorance and legitimate excuses, the rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure.
never too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak out. Wounded skies above say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Do-do-oh. Do you think we have time? Do you? To what she can. And charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year. Yeah, this is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take my chances, say. I sang it 20 years and a day, cause nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love, Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to hope, there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
Ever needed to make a phone call but didn't want the person you're calling to know that it was you on the other end? Have you ever needed to make a call and wanted to keep your phone number and location private? Well, now you can with PatriotPhone.com. PatriotPhone.com will enable you to make unlimited calls anonymously. That's right, unlimited anonymous phone calls to anywhere in the U.S. and 36 countries around the world. Our most popular phone plan includes unlimited calls, your own phone number, voicemail, call forwarding, and many other great features. Visit PatriotPhone.com to get your own phone number in any state and take back control of your phone calls. PatriotPhone.com also allows you to record your calls and access all of your phone records online. PatriotPhone.com works with iPhones, Android-based phones, and Windows computers. Protect your privacy and your freedom with unlimited anonymous telephone service from PatriotPhone.com. Today, that's PatriotPhone.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.